Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 145.
I recently saw a post on Facebook that said, in order for us to truly be serving Christ, we have to get out of our comfort zone. I tend to cringe when I hear lofty platitudes or extreme mantras. Does that mean that if we are ever comfortable in life, we are not actually serving God? If we are finding ourselves enjoying the service the Lord has given us, that we should start sticking forks in our thighs so we make ourselves uncomfortable? The idea that we have to get out of our comfort zone, break out of the mold, take a blind leap, etc., etc., leads many people to end up failing and then giving up. We are commanded to seek out opportunities for service. Sometimes these will be hard and uncomfortable, and other times they will be great blessings. And so that everyone doesn't think I have become Joel Osteen, let me make a clarification. The reason why we don't seek out uncomfortable opportunities is because we don't need to. The Christian life already comes with ready-made discomforts and sufferings. It is not the seeking out of these discomforts that we have been called to. It is the endurance of them. Hebrews 10:39 declares, "True Christians do not shrink back from the faith. They press on to the end." What does this look like in the Christian life? How can we tell when we are avoiding suffering because the comfort is just too nice? And what does this have to do with Pilgrim's Progress? We will discuss these questions and more today on Theology Simply Profound.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tarullo. I serve as pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. Rob is an elder here with me at Westminster. He's also an MDiv student at Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando. Welcome back, Rob, after a long hiatus we've had here, huh? I think, like, what, almost
it's
a good
been,
month.
It's been a month, yeah. Do you realize what I had to do to get back here? I got stuck in Pennsylvania. I got stuck in
Chicago.
Nothing against... I was trying to get back to Chicago.
Why?
Well, that's a good question. That is a good question. Nothing against Pennsylvania, but...
Hey, Pennsylvania's gorgeous.
My flight was canceled. My flight was canceled, so I decided to drive back. Don't ever do that. Drove through
in
a blizzard.
In the wintertime, when there's a blizzard.
Yeah, so I drove through a blizzard in the first day, and then the second day, as the radio is saying... You know, for anyone in Chicago, I was in Ohio at the time, and they're talking, anybody in Chicago, don't ever go outside your house. And I'm driving to
You're going
Chicago.
Back, yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching the little temperature gauge on the car, you know, creep -9, -10.
Eventually, -23.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how cold it got.
It was -19 when I got to drop off the rental car.
-19.
And I was like, what am I doing?
Chicago?
Yeah. That wasn't... Well, the worst part was that there were some black ice just outside Chicago. Mm-hmm. The road got closed and there were black ice and there were some bad accidents. And
oh, I bet.
That's where I thought, what did I do? Why didn't I just stay in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
I could have hung out. I was going to hang out with Jeff Waddington, actually.
And Jeff Waddington.
Yeah, from our good friends over at Crisis Center and Reform Forum.
Reform Forum. He's on the board of Reform Forum. Yeah. One of the co-founders.
Yes.
In the early years, I've been hearing on Crisis Center, they've mm-hmm. been, you know, what has it been, about 11 years? You know, they've been talking about it.
It's been a long time. We were going to hang out, and then because I was going to stay, mm-hmm. and I thought, no. Because then Melody's going, you should come home.
Of course.
And I missed my wife.
So yeah. Absolutely.
I decided to come home. But yeah, that took me about 3 weeks trying to get through.
Well, I was supposed to leave.
Yeah.
I was supposed to leave.
That's right.
Right. And go away from Chicago and enjoy St. Augustine, Florida for a few days.
It was a good idea.
But my flight got canceled. And by the time, for some reason, they did it really late in the day. There were still other flights, but it was just... didn't work out to where it was too much.
Yeah.
And didn't make it down to St. Augustine, Florida. I wish I had, but I can still watch the conference. And I'm just going to do a little plug here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because these are our friends down at Covenant Presbyterian Church. It's an OPC congregation in St. Augustine, Florida. Wonderful pastor, Eric Watkins, there. They sponsored a conference entitled Building Bridges Instead of Barriers, Reforming Race Relationships in the Church. If you weren't able to make that conference, I do recommend you going to their website at covenant-opchurch.org. And on that website, you will find a watch live stream. It's no longer live, of course, but at their YouTube station, you'll find all of the various recordings of the lectures on video, as well as their panel discussions. And, you know, if you're going to listen to anything on this subject, this is a great place to start. These are all NAPARC related men and women speaking, and several OPC, several PCA brothers and sisters talking about very important issues in a very helpful way. And you're not going to necessarily agree with everything. That's not what I'm saying. But I think it was done in a helpful way, a God-honoring way. And it'd be good to go check that out and see those videos. So that's my plug. Check it out. And I hope you can enjoy that. Back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Already in progress.
Already in progress.
Yeah, so it is good to be back. It's going to be back recording, mm-hmm. and it's good to be back in Chicago.
In Studio B, Studio Basement.
Yes, yes.
It's been since, I think, right before Christmas is when we last recorded together, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And it was... And so we were at -23 last week,
mm-hmm.
and now we're at like 49.
Well, not today.
Not today. No.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yesterday it was 49.
Sunday. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we have like, today it's about 20, high of 30 today.
Yeah.
Compared to last week, it's a 50 degree difference.
Yeah. This is,
but a few days ago, it was a 70 degree difference.
Yeah.
That's just.
It's incredible to think about.
It is really strange. I mean, yeah. It's a wonder that, you know, the streets don't buckle. Well, maybe some do. But.
Have you driven the streets? They're called potholes. They absorb cars. I hit one yesterday and thought, you know what? Just kill me now. Don't do this slowly.
Yeah.
Kill me quick.
Well, we had water in the basement here, and it was from ice melt and snow melt, you know, just a massive amount of water melt or snow melting, water melting.
Yes, water melting.
And I was like, oh, we thought we had the leaks all fixed, but no, we got it in the winter. All right. But we are back to Pilgrim's Progress, right?
Yeah, we are. And
here I am. I feel like I'm really yelling. Good. I don't know why.
Yeah. Why is everybody yelling?
Sorry, everybody.
I think, we're a little punchy again.
Yeah, we're in a good mood. We're face to face, you know.
Yeah, actually recording, which is nice. Yeah, we know we left Christian in a good spot, actually, because he had defeated Apollyon and been given comfort and mm-hmm. healing from Christ, both spiritually and in our story physically. He's given healing.
Well, yeah. I mean, it says here just to bring us back to the text of Pilgrim's Progress, right before where we got to at the end of this section with Apollyon. This is in the midst of chapter 4, if I remember correctly. Then there came to him a hand with some of the leaves of the tree of life, in which Christian took and applied to the wounds that he had received in the battle, and was healed immediately. He also sat down in that place to eat bread and to drink of the bottle that was given him a little before. So being refreshed, he addressed himself to his journey with his sword drawn in his hand. For he said, I know not, but some other enemy may be at hand. But he met with no other affront from Apollyon quite through this valley. So that's exactly as you said. Yeah. But I think it's, you know, we're dealing with the Pilgrim's Progress. It's good to have the text in front of us every now and then.
Yeah. So now he gets through this battle with Apollyon, which is, it was straining both mentally and physically. And now he's about to enter into the valley of the shadow of death. So it's kind of an out of the frying pan into the fire kind of here. And you know, he's just had a battle.
Just read that section in The Hobbit.
And yeah, there you go. See, I wasn't going to say it, but now you bring it up. Yes. He's entering into... What will be said of the valley, that he actually has a harder time walking through the valley than he did at fighting Apollyon.
Yeah, now here Christian was worse put to it than in his fight with Apollyon, as by the sequel you shall see. Right? I mean, this is a worse section for him, a worse part of the of the Christian walk for him. And, you know, right at the beginning here, we're not told why yet. We're just told it's going to be worse. This is worse for him, which is just like, wow. Because, I mean, the ballet with Apollyon was not, you know,
terrifying. His first inclination was to turn back.
Right.
But he knew that he would be killed if he did that, so he had to face him. And, but as he battled with Apollyon, he actually grew in confidence and strength and faith and was able to defeat this specific attack.
Yeah, but I mean, if he's coming out of this attack and he's refreshed and he's strong and he's going into the valley of the shadow of death, what makes it worse? I mean, what makes it so hard?
Well, I think, and of course we haven't gotten him in there yet.
Right, we're not in there yet,
I think it's because for many people, because I don't want to throw everybody into the same category, but for most people, facing something direct is easier than facing something that is more the oppression. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a direct battle that you have to overcome, it's in front of you. You realize what's going on. It's intense, but it's usually more short-lived. With the valley that he's going to go through, there is just this terror that takes over with nothing really tangible that's coming. I mean, some things, but overall, it's more the fear as he travels. And so he doesn't have that direct confrontation in front of him that he can evaluate. It's more that his own mind is actually creating things that might not be there.
Is it an unknown enemy?
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that it's just not as directed, more subtle temptations maybe, or things like
that's
that.
Part of it.
Okay.
I mean, let me tell you how the valley is described.
Sure. Okay.
So we're told that the valley it's a solitary place. So he's alone. It's a wilderness. So wildernesses, as we understand them, you know, usually dry, windy, and it's a hard crossing when you go through a wilderness. It's full of deserts, which I don't think I really ever caught that before because it's a valley of, you know, it's a valley. So you don't think of it as being deserts, but that's how it's described. It's full of deserts. It's filled with pits. There's a drought. So again, we go back to the wilderness, that dry, you know, there's no water to drink. So he's always thirsty. He's always struggling as he as he goes through. You know, it's this dry place. It's overcast with the clouds of confusion. So again, I think it goes back to that mental state of you know, he's on a journey, he's going through, he's being worn down, he's thirsty, and he's confused. I mean, that's what he's, you know, When this is created, when the valley, if you look at it from a literary standpoint, you know, there's almost this mystical aspect to it. It reminded me of actually entering into the realm of fairy, because you enter into the realm of fairy and it's this otherworldliness.
Help me. What is the realm of fairy?
The realm of fairy is it's where we get the idea of fairy tales from, or fairy stories. And the realm of fairy is seen as it's more natural than our world, but it's our world is actually almost seen as constructed by man, and the world of fairy is more the realm of nature in its purest form, and within nature. In this land of fairy, this magical, I hesitate to use the word magical because that's just, it conveys something that like the literary genre does not convey.
Okay.
Magical in the sense that when a human enters into it, what happens there is almost magical to them. And so the thing about fairy is you don't understand that you've entered into it. You wander in, and all of a sudden, you realize that somewhere along the way, you've entered there, and things are going to happen to you in this land that are different than how you normally. And this is where, I mean, one of the best stories is Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Where the Green Knight comes in to Arthurian court and challenges them. And he says to them, well, all these bad things are going to happen to you, and I need, just cut off my head. And they're thinking, well, okay, we can defeat this guy because we just cut off his head. So they do. Mm-hmm. And he picks up his head and he walks out. And then Sir Gawain has to go, and there's all these adventures. He has to enter into the land of Faerie. But what you realize is once the Green Knight enters in, mm-hmm. they've entered into Faerie.
Okay.
And so Bunyan brings Pilgrim into this otherworldly place. You know, it's almost as if every bad thing that you can travel through has been put into this one valley. And in the description, you know, it says that it's got this clouds of confusion. Death spreads its wings over it. It's dreadful and it's without order. So, you know, without order, again, the world that Christian had been in has order. He understands. You go, you know, he went up a mountain. There was a place to rest. He's stopped at people's houses. He's traveled. There's been walls. He's traveled on roads. But now he's entering into a place that it's chaos. It's without order. That's why he can walk in this valley and there's a desert place. And then there's pits. And he doesn't, you know, because this cloud of confusion or this overcast that causes confusion, he's wandering through in not even understanding if he's on the right path. If he's, am I supposed to be going forward? Am I supposed to be going back? Which way am I facing? I mean, those are the kinds of things that the idea that we're supposed to get that's happening to Christian, that he's in this place of confusion and dread and fear. And because you're enduring that for a long period of time, that's why it's, but just give me Apollyon. I'd rather just stand there and, you know, in terror and have to have a battle of wits and then a mm-hmm. physical battle with this dragon-like creature. Because in this land, as Christian's walking through, we're also told, in a minute, we're going to hear from the guys that he talks to, that there's hobgoblins and there's dragons. And so he's wandering through, and the idea you're getting is that he can hear these creatures mm-hmm. in the distance. That he doesn't ever encounter them, but he hears them. And that's worse. Give me the guy standing in front of me than the guy that I think is around the corner.
Well, I mean, you certainly have brought out why this would be worse, and I think I agree. And I think what Bunyan is getting at there is that sense of fear. Sometimes even, you know, we talk about it, you know, fear the dark or fear the unknown, the things around us and, you know, spooky stories and stuff, you know, or mm-hmm. campfires, and you hear the, you know, sounds out around you, or you know, walking, you just see the eyes glinting and the, you know, through movies, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I also find it interesting, you know, we call this he calls this the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And he draws that, and he even gives us context from the Jeremiah passage. He references the prophet Jeremiah, and he describes it this way. He says, a wilderness, a land of deserts and of pits, a land of drought and of the shadow of death, a land that no man but a Christian passeth through, and where no man dwelt. And that comes from Jeremiah 2:6. Now, he's drawing out of that passage. He doesn't quote the whole of the passage. The whole of the passage begins this way. They did not say, where is the Lord who brought us out from the land of Egypt, who led us in the wilderness, in a land of deserts and pits, in a land of drought and deep darkness, in a land that none passes through, where no man dwells. So it's a question there. He said they did not say this. And it's referring to the people of God when they're coming out of the land of Egypt. Obviously, so the context is the Exodus. And you notice the translation difference there. The language of deep darkness is how most modern translations understand what was at one time translated as shadow of death. But I do appreciate the language of Shadow of Deep Darkness, because it does draw us back to Psalm 23, and, you know, going through the valley of the shadow of death. And you can even, I think, the land of drought, deep darkness. Mm-hmm. It's a land of wilderness, and that's where the people of God end up after the Exodus. And I think that's what's drawing us here, is that wilderness journey, which is interesting, I think, because that's an area of confusion. It's a land that is parched, where the people of God are in great need. God provides for the people. But you also have spies that go forth and spy out the land and then run back with a evil report.
Yeah,
and that's how it's described in here. And I don't know if there's any specific connections, but when I was reading this section again, and it says, and I think we're getting there, so I don't hope I don't go too close.
Wait for it.
I'm just going to read it real quickly, though. But it does. It says, "The children of them that brought up an evil report of the good land."
Yeah.
Right, and so it's very reminiscent of the spies who went forward and then came back and brought an evil report of the promised land. You know, we can't go in there. There's too many giants, and there's, you know, it's awful. Yeah. We're like grasshoppers. We're gonna. So there's this fear that keeps them from going forward. And then obviously,
I mean, the difference is that they're giving a report of the valley.
Yes,
which is their report is going to be accurate.
Yeah, but it says of the good land.
Right.
But how do we want to understand that?
Well, I mean, what this is saying is that these are the children of those. And so it's their parents who are saying bad things about the good land. Mm-hmm. So they were saying, Christian's trying to get there. He's trying to get to the land of Beulah.
Of course.
And the beautiful land. Mm-hmm. But back in his hometown, the city of destruction, these are the people that would mock the king or Jesus. I mean, they would mock. Yeah. There is no, come on, there's no pie in the sky, heaven that you're, come on, this is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
So this is their children. Now, I think it's an interesting connection. I'm not saying that there isn't any kind of connection with what you were bringing out.
There might not be. I mean, I could just be making it all up in my head.
No, I still think it's...
Or he could just be building off of imagery and not making a connection, but using similar language. So, I mean, he's... When you're so thoroughly, you know, just have the word in your bones, so to speak. Mm-hmm. If you write a story like this, you're going to use imagery, and you might not have any specific reference in mind.
Right.
I could just be making the whole thing up.
I mean, when it comes to just the second generation, because the first generation dies off because of that, because they accept the 10 spies and their report,
of course,
and they reject the two. When that generation dies off and the next generation is about to enter the land, just before that happens is where you get the serpents that come in and they make the snake and they lift it up on the pole. And I mean, and before that, this generation, the second generation that had grown up in the wilderness, that had been given manna every day.
Right.
That know the stories of deliverance out of Egypt, at that point are complaining that they don't have enough water. So God gives them water. This is when Moses is supposed to speak to the rock, but he hits the rock.
Smack.
And then he's forbidden to go in the promised land.
Right. Yeah.
So here's the second generation saying, you know, we're still going to be complaining in the exact same way as our fathers did, even though they know, as they're watching that generation fall dead in the wilderness, they know that's what happens when you complain. They're still complaining. So the fact that Bunyan here is bringing out the fact that the children of the people who are complaining are also turning back from, as Christian will say later on, that, you know, this is the way I must go. This is the way Christians go.
Mm-hmm.
They're proving that they're not believers, that they don't have faith. And it just shows you that generational, you know, we make the same mistakes. We are all sinners and we make the same mistakes, which is why it's good to learn from our mistakes, but also the mistakes of the past.
Right.
So here's Bunyan sitting there day in, day out. Well, his mind wanders. Our minds wander. And depression can easily set in. You know, this is a deep darkness. Depression is a deep darkness. And going through life can be long. It can be hard. there can be times in our lives when, you know, and some people, we've talked about this before about depression.
Right. Yeah.
Some people are more susceptible than others, but still, when you're going through a bout of depression, or you're going through just a hard time in your life, maybe you're not even someone that is really given over to depression, but life can get hard, and well, still it's not enjoyable.
Just, right. There's discouragement. There's, you know, melancholy. There are things that just draw us down, the things that disappoint us. And these things that do this, when they, especially if they are persistent, and there's multiple over and over again without certain encouragements, you know, if you're not prone to depression, you can still end up there.
Yeah.
And you can only imagine, you know, a dank prison cell, cold, most likely. I'm sure they didn't have electric heaters.
Nope. No, they did not.
Right. Warming you in these places. And so not only do you have that, the fact that you're solitary, you have poor conditions, and you're going to physically feel it. You know, I mean, you spend a winter in Chicago, and if you enjoy the sunlight, you might start getting, you know, sad.
Yeah, you have to get a sad lamp.
Right, you can get a sad lamp, right? Yeah. You can get a sad lamp to help you out.
Bunyan couldn't do that.
Bunyan could not do that, nor could he take a quick trip down to the tropics.
No, there's nobody in England could take it. Maybe now it's easier.
But that's going to be a part of this, and just the physical reality that Bunyan's going through. But that's the Christian life, you know, walking in this valley of the shadow of death or through this deep darkness. While there might be biblical and historical precedents in the Christian life, it really is the whole of the Christian life because of this is described as a wilderness journey, a pilgrimage of which we are on. And this subtle temptations and the difficulties and the trials and the darkness that we have to live within, you know, as Paul calls it, this present evil age. I mean, the whole age is characterized by evil. And we live within in a world that is oppressed by the power of darkness. And so it's not just the day-to-day things that we have to deal with in our own heart and our own minds, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. When we don't have a lot to do and our minds are not filled with other things, we go to bad places sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's not just those things, it's living in the corruption of other people as well that then frustrates our lives. It's living in a world where our brothers and sisters are oppressed, and now we know more and more about it because of, the information age. And we have leaders and, you know, officials that do stupid and awful things and pass legislation that, you know, make us sick.
Yeah.
And these things get us down and we think, why God? And we think, you know, is the Lord sovereign? You know, horrible questions come in our minds. They're horrible because they actually go at the heart of who God is. These, of course, they're not true. They're awful things to think about God. And they lead us into a dark place because we know we're not supposed to be thinking those things about God because God is sovereign and God is good. Mm-hmm. And we have to remember those things when we find ourselves in those dark places. And that's, you know, before coming here, he had that. He had the bread of life. Mm-hmm. He had the wine, and these things were there to nurture him and to nourish him. And now he's heading into a dark place.
Right. It's interesting because we were talking about this before we were recording. How this is the valley of the shadow of death.
Mm-hmm.
This is not death.
Yeah, this is not death itself.
Yeah.
Right. This is the shadow of death is all around us. I mean, here you have written on our show notes here, death spreads its wings over this place, right? I mean, so it's not, you know, being borne up on eagle's wings here, and being lifted up. This is feeling the burden and oppression of death's dark door. Not that you're about to die, but you feel the oppression of death, the sickness of death, the disease of death, you know, all those things that make us just feel ill, all, you know, that's that burden all around you. That's what that's what he's trying to describe here, just living in this sick and sick world.
Right. And it can bring about confusion and dread and that feeling of thirst, you know, that if you ever been really thirsty, it's all you can think about. It's like, I'm going to get some water or something. It just, mm-hmm. you know, we don't really have to endure that much these days because there's usually places to get water over the place.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm dying of thirst. Yeah. We are so hyperbolic on things like that. Right.
Yeah. But I mean, especially when you're going through a wilderness, mm-hmm. you're going to be conserving whatever water you have and you're going to be afraid that you're going to run out. And so he really brings that out, this place of just dryness. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, how many Christians you get up and in the morning and you think, I just, to face all the things that I have to do today, it's just depressing. I mean, just getting through that. And as you talked about this earlier, that I know we've talked about it in the past episodes, the idea of, you know, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. We wrestle against the powers and principalities of the air.
Right.
There
is
this constant barrage for the Christian. From the enemy of our souls that would see us destroyed. Mm-hmm. And he will, you know, again, maybe we'll do some episodes someday on the Screwtape Letters, which is just fantastic. Because what they're always doing with the demons in order to get the Christian is, well, try it this way. That didn't work. Okay, try it the opposite way. Now, you know, make them love money. Or try to make them dread that they're not going to have enough money, and then now make them feel guilty because they have too much money.
Yeah.
It's whatever way Satan can distract us from Christ and to destroy us, he's going to use, and that's what we're getting in this valley. We're getting that just going through the ringer mm-hmm. kind of idea, and you know. Bunyan says at the beginning of his prison sentence for the first several months that he was in constant fear that he was about to be killed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, where was he? Was he standing in front of the king at that time? Was he standing there giving a great defense? No, he was sitting and he was waiting and his own mind was just playing on him. And normally what we can think of is never as bad as whatever the reality is going to be. It's just kind of part of who we are, maybe, or maybe it's our own sin trying to destroy us. We can always think about things being worse mm-hmm. than they are.
Worst case scenarios, you know, they come in there. Leland Ryken writes about this section. He says, on the allegorical level, then, we are given pictures of the power of evil in the form of what the Bible calls principalities and powers, which is what I think you're just mm-hmm. talking about there. And so this gets at the worse part. Compared to these giant threats, principalities and powers, the more subtle obstacles to the Christian faith represented in people like talkative and timorous seem rather lame, or rather tame, I should say. The dangers through which Christian passes in this chapter are more than human, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. it's that spiritual warfare that continues, mm-hmm. and it's not that face-to-face combat, as you know, we saw previously. It's this all around you and within you.
Yeah. What do you think Bunyan means when he says that only Christians go through this valley?
Yeah.
People who are not Christians, they get depressed too.
Well, yeah, but they don't go through it. It's not a battle front mm-hmm. with spiritual powers in the sense of they're not, they have no renewed heart. They have no, they are of that world. Right. That world is theirs. That's their place of residence. Mm. Death, the shadows, the darkness, right? So if you think of it in terms, you know, of John, the Apostle John, and, you know, you're either of the darkness or of the light. Mm-hmm. And so as someone who is of the light and you're walking through it, you feel it all the more because it's not yours. But if you're in the, if you're of the darkness, it's like a fish in water.
Yeah.
Right. They have no idea they're in it because this is their atmosphere, so to speak. And so darkness is their atmosphere. Now, does that mean they're perfectly evil in every, No, of course not. That's not the point, but this is their air that they breathe. Mm-hmm. And so for the Christian, this is not their air. And so they feel stifled. They feel as though they can't breathe, you know, using imagery here.
Yeah, no,
it's not.
No, I think this is where, you know, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees and he's saying the reason why you're saying these things is because you're your father, the devil.
The devil, right, yeah.
This is what comes out of him. Or, you know, mm-hmm. It's not what goes into a man that defiles them. It's what comes out.
Right. And this is, you know, for an unbeliever, this experience would not be going, this would not be their experience walking in the world, right? A valley, they couldn't describe it in these terms. It doesn't mean that they're not going to have hard times. That's not, certainly not what I think Bunyan would be saying, but it certainly wouldn't be the same way of describing it, because there is no battle against the principalities and powers of the world, because they are of the principalities and powers of the, that is the father, the devil, and that is their father, the devil. And so I think that's got to be the way he's thinking. I mean, if it's a different way, then I'm just not understanding it yet.
No, I think you're right. I mean, this is the kind of suffering the Christian's about to endure as he goes into this valley is something that only is for Christians, because we know Christ. And so this world becomes more and more oppressive the longer we live. I think it's a good thing in the sense that we should be longing for this world to end and the next world to begin. Mm-hmm. I want to live in the world where there is no sin.
Right. Thy kingdom come.
Right.
Right. We
long for that. Oh, Lord Jesus, come quickly.
Yeah.
And that's what I think Christ or Christian here is enduring. He's living through the world in this oppression. This is the dry place. This is the place of confusion. This is the place of despair. We don't want this. Mm-hmm. We want the world to come.
Yeah.
Which is perfect. And so at times we're going to be feeling this more acutely than at other times.
Absolutely. And at different stages of life,
right.
You know, if you talk to the older people within your congregation that are, as they would say, you know, closer every day to seeing Jesus,
right.
They think of it more acutely day to day, especially mm-hmm. when you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, they're like, I can go in any moment and I'm ready. And that's not the way that a younger person typically speaks,
right?
Because they have, you know, we put it, we have our whole life ahead of us,
they're
right?
Invincible.
And well, even when given perspective, even, you know, let's just say us, right? We don't live every day waking up saying today could be the day, because you have kids, you have hopes, you have dreams, you have jobs, you have career, you have, you know, just different things you want to accomplish in life. And when you get to a certain part, you know, you're like, well, I'm on the other side of those things. Yeah. And so you don't think about accomplishing those things as much because they're already done, or you're just like, well, I'm past that time. I'm just not going to happen.
Well, and you and I probably think of the same person when we think of who you're describing. This is Ruth.
Oh, well, yes, certainly Ruth was Ruth. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
We just had the 1 year anniversary
of her death.
Her death. And she was in her 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, for as long as I knew her, she would, you know, here she is. She is the dear old saint. She mm-hmm. is the poster child for dear old saint. And you'd walk in and she'd be energetic and full of life and enjoying her family. Mm-hmm. But every day it would be, I'm ready.
Right.
I'm ready to go. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to go. And so when that day came, she was happy for that day. And she was. It's hard for the world to understand that.
It is hard for the world, and it's hard for us to understand it sometimes too.
To feel it,
right.
I agree.
The reason I bring this up though is because we don't also want to seek death for ourselves,
Because
death is the great last enemy. So there is this tension about it, and I think we need to maintain that tension. Mm-hmm. That, you know, come Lord Jesus, come quickly is not a suicidal tendency, right? That's not what we're saying. And the longing for it is not a suicidal tendency. And I'm not trying to bring the band to mind.
We don't long for death.
Right.
It is an enemy.
Yes.
But we long for the world to come.
Yes.
And that might be a tension. And other people might say, well, yeah, I'm not sure if you can hold both those things. But the scripture does.
It does. Yeah.
And, you know, it goes back to what I said in my opening where it just drives me crazy where people say, you know, in order to serve Christ, you have to actually get out of your comfort zone. I think there's lots of people that are serving Christ and very happy with and very comfortable in what they're doing. And yet they're serving Christ in a wonderful way. And I think of, you know, the apostles when in Acts, they kept getting put in jail. And what would they do? They would sing while they're in jail. And, you know, they weren't they didn't want to be in jail, but they were still rejoicing in Christ that they were considered worthy to suffer for the name of Christ. And, you know, Peter is in this deep sleep. He's in prison. He's in this deep sleep that an angel comes and has to shake him to get, you know, wake up. You know, you think you're in jail and you're not going to sleep very well. Peter didn't care.
He's comfy.
Yeah, he was fine. But as we're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, it is when people are suffering from depression, you don't need to remain there. Christian doesn't stay there. He comes out the other side. This is, Bunyan is saying, look, this is true of the Christian life. But there's a time when we come out of there. Mm-hmm. And while we will see Christian enduring some other hardships, some of his own making, later on, we also see wonderful times of him walking along the road with his fellow Christians, discussing the things of God, enjoying himself.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to, again, for clarity, when you say, when you talk about comfort zone, getting out of your comfort zone, you're not saying stay in your place of complacency.
No.
Right. Which is this sort of this satisfaction in your own place as in a sort of a smug kind of way. Like, I'm okay here and I'm going to stay here and I'm not going to worry about anything else.
Right.
So you're not saying that. You're not saying that. You're saying that challenge of quote unquote, get out of your comfort zone is kind of like it's become like a catchphrase.
Yeah.
And the catch all, like, you know, I don't know what else to say. So just get out of your comfort zone.
Well, yeah. And I think it's also used by people who they have a certain ministry. Mm-hmm. They're part of a youth ministry, which is great. God has gifted them to do that. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at everyone else saying, you need to get out of your comfort zone. You need to come help with this ministry because, you know, otherwise you're being complacent because you're not doing that. Well, no, maybe they're not gifted to work with youth. And we see this, you know, working with the homeless or working, you know, going to Africa and being missionary. God has called people to do different things. Mm-hmm. And yet, I often see that or hear that from people. The specific thing I was watching, I was actually watching a conversation on Facebook. I was not participating because I don't like to participate in that kind of stuff because Facebook is a really bad place to be doing that. And that's what they were saying is they were like, you know, well, you know, all these Christians that are just not engaged and they need to break out of their comfort zone. And they, well, if you're a Christian and you're not serving Christ in areas in your life, then yeah, you need to be doing that. I'm talking about people that enjoy what they're doing as servants for Christ. I'm talking about the apostles that are preaching and put in jail and sing. Well, we should have that attitude as well.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
We can have that very good attitude of coming to the worship Lord's Day by Lord's Day and doing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
That's a very nice comfort zone. And you're using your talents and your gifts to serve the church.
Right.
It's a very simple life. And there's nothing wrong with that. We long for a quiet and tranquil life.
We should long for peace in our life.
In this world. And you can serve people. Now, you know, the challenge might be, well, you know, invite your neighbor to church. Well, okay, sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I appreciate that. It just stopped guilting me.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a lot of what it is. It's you know, guilting someone.
And there's been...
into doing something they don't need to do.
You can have a time where an opportunity will come up and then you invite your neighbor to church. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to invite them every week. But that does mean that when the opportunity comes up...
You don't neglect it.
You don't neglect it.
Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Try not to miss those open doors that the Lord gives you.
Yeah. Are we seeking those opportunities?
Yeah. Are we seeking, are we, you know, even making them at times, you know, showing hospitality. This is off subject, but, you know, we often think that hospitality is just for the leaders of the church, but all Christians are meant to show some form of hospitality, even just simple gestures of welcome. Mm-hmm. Is a sense of hospitality, of showing a sense of kindness and generosity to others. Anyway, that's off subject, but we can use our gifts and talents in so many different ways, and we can do that in this world well.
Right, and Christian is going to go through this valley, but he's going to come out the other side, and that gives us hope as well that we shouldn't say, well, the Christian life is only fear and trembling and dread and depression. Right. And No, this will happen in our lives. But we pray that the Christ will bring us through to the other side. And one of the themes that comes up in this little passage with Christian here, something that keeps happening to him, is people keep trying to tell him to go back. Go back to the city of destruction.
Yeah, yeah. And we have, it's described here as these men, right? Yeah, We've already mentioned them, but go ahead.
Right, yeah, they come out and they're running back. He's about to enter the valley, and they didn't go in it. They didn't go in the valley. They kind of got there and were peeking through, and they give this description. That's where we kind of already talked about the description. Something else they see, they talk about how it's being filled with hobgoblins and dragons from the pit. You know, these are dragons from hell itself. And Christian, and I think he can hear it as they're talking, that you can hear wailing and moaning of those who are in hell.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, if you care about your own life, if you are a person who desires peace, turn around and run away. That's what we're doing. We're getting out of here. We're not going to go through this. And he categorizes them as although I think they're adults, but he's saying these are the children of those who blaspheme against the good land. And how does he know that? Because they've shrunk back mm-hmm. from the path, and they're telling him he should shrink back as well. And it's during these times of depression that's all we want to do.
Is shrink back. Yeah. Yeah. It's easier for us to do then. Yeah. And he says, and I saw in the dream that when Christian got to the borders of the shadow of death. So like you said, we're not at the valley yet. We're at the borders of what's called the shadow of death. There met with him two men, children of them that brought up an evil report of the good land, making haste to go back, to whom Christian spake as follows. And then there's a brief interaction, not very long, as this whole section that we're dealing with today is only a page. still within section 4, chapter 4 of it here. And that, you know, they come with, like it says here, of haste. And they're like, back. You know, you have this sense of urgency. And he's like, why? You know, what's the matter? And matter, they said, we were going that way as you are going, and went as far as we durst. And indeed, we were almost past coming back. For had we gone a little further, we had not been here to bring the news to thee. You know, it's like, hey, we're bringing you good news. Turn around. Right. A false gospel.
Really care.
Yeah. They do. Yeah. In their minds, right?
In their minds, they do.
The darkness is shadowing them. They're saying this is something that we cannot be a part of. We want to, you know, this is the world we're a part of, but we're just going to move away from it a little bit more. We're going to get in a nice little comfy area. Mm. Anyway.
So they're telling him. I mean, I think that We do have to take into account that in one sense they are caring. They're stopping and saying, hey, if just to step into that valley, you're going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
Turn around now. If you care about your own life, turn around, just like we are. And we've stopped here to tell you, to warn you. And Christian says, no. If this is the path that the Lord has sent me on, if this is the path to the good land, then I will go through.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still holding his sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which is the sword of the Spirit. So he's going to enter into this. He's willing. If this is what the Lord has for me, I will go through, but I will be led by the Spirit.
Yeah. So they parted, after describing the land that they saw from the edge, as you said, you've talked about the hobgoblins, the satyrs, the dragons of the pit, the confusion. The opening to the pit of hell, you can hear it, as you said, without order. He then says, or in the discussion, so they parted, and Christian went on his way, but still with his sword drawn in his hand for fear lest he should be assaulted. So it's almost bringing you. We've had a little bit of discussion about this, but it brings you right back to where he ended at the with Apollyon.
Yeah,
he drew his sword there, and he was about to be assaulted. Right, he was afraid that he was about to be assaulted, or he was getting himself ready to be assaulted. Yeah. And then he has it. We have this brief interlude prior to going into a place where there will be assaults.
Yeah.
And he's learning and he's being warned not to go. And so you see this. It's not just the valley of the shadow of death that will carry temptations. It's the warnings about it. It's the people saying you shouldn't even make your way into it.
Right.
That is a temptation in and of itself, the temptation of not going forward, but of turning around, not pressing on, not persevering, not continuing. And that is why, and to a certain extent, you might think of, you know, we need to have the fellowship of the saints around us, the communion of the saints, to help us move forward. Now, that's not brought out here. I'm just thinking, you know, now, you know, you can easily be spun around in the confusion and spun around such that you don't want to move forward. You think, whoa, these are good brothers.
Yeah.
They're really, as you were saying earlier, caring for me. They really don't want to see me get hurt. So I'm going to trust their opinion and stick with them and go back. But instead, I think you have Christian here knowing that this is the right path. He's heard other good promises prior to this, and this is the direct path he needs to go. This is the way he needs to go, and he continues on the path and he presses forward. And the next statement is, you know, I saw then in my dream, so far as this valley reached, there was on the right in the hand, you know, a ditch. And so he needs to walk on this this narrow path, because one way he's going to fall and another way he's going to fall. So there's a narrow path that he needs to go through, this valley of the shadow of death. Once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Of course, you can find us at reformforum.org. And if you want to reach us and ask us any questions or have any comments, please feel free to check us or to email us at mail@reformforum.org. I also want to bring up a few sort of housekeeping matters, because we haven't plugged this as much as I think we could. There's an upcoming seminar in April in Wimberley, Texas. And I think this is a great opportunity for any of our listeners. You can go to reformforum.org /events/Wimberley, or just, you know, click on events and you'll get there. It's called, the seminar called Foundations of Covenant Theology. Dr. Lane Tipton will be speaking. It's coming up in April 2nd through the 4th. This is put on by Reform Forum, of which we are a part, of course, here. And so if you want to go to that, check out that information. It's going to be a wonderful event, so do check that out. Also, you remember, we are a listener-supported podcast, and so you want to go to reformforum.org/donate to set up a schedule in order to have your regular donation sent in. That would be really helpful. Another thing you can do, because we haven't plugged this either, I'm just going to give it all at once right here. If you haven't taken the time to go to iTunes and review us there, we want to hear your feedback. And you can do that at, of course, iTunes, and search Theology Simply Profound. Give us a written review. You can also give us stars, all that kind of good stuff. But that does help us out. And you want to find out more about the congregation that Rob and I serve at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church, you can go to westminsteropc.org. And if you're in the Chicagoland area, but not near us, and want to find out about other great Reformed, I should say, Orthodox Presbyterian congregations, you want to go to chicagoreformed.org. Rob, what's up next time in our journey with Pilgrim, or Christian?
Well, next time we'll bring him through the valley, and we'll talk about the giants that he faces.
Pope and Penguin? Pope and Penguin? Pope and Pagan.
I don't know what translation you have, but...
All right. Again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.